Today, we are going to study on the ninth chapter, or the eighth chapter. Yesterday, we talked about the equality of self and others, and exchanging self with others. So, continuing that subject, thinking of oneself alone is fault, and thinking of others as your priority is a quality. And also, if you think on the result of such actions, then you will know if you harm others for your own sake, then that will yield result to be born in the hell realms where you experience inconceivable sufferings. And if you harm yourself, which means like undertaking hardship or bearing your own pain for the sake of others, then as a result of such action, you will gain all the qualities. So, therefore, in short, all the happiness are caused by wishing others to be happy, and all the sufferings are caused by wishing oneself to be happy. Now we talk about the faults of not exchanging the self with others. If you don't exchange, if we don't practice this self-exchange, then one will not accomplish Buddhahood. Not only that, one cannot not gain the mundane happiness. And not only that, in the future lives also, one will not gain happiness. One will be born in a difficult state where you experience sufferings. So, therefore, those who don't know what is to be adopted and what is to be abandoned, or due to their ignorance, although they wish to accomplish happiness, but they destroy the cause of happiness. And by harming others, one will experience sufferings in this life as well as in the future lives. So, it is important to know the benefits of doing such practice, and also it is important to know the faults of not practicing the self-exchange with others. And after knowing the benefits and faults, then we should follow or practice the self-exchange and try to abandon the wrong deeds. All the harms and fears and sufferings that we face in this life or in this world are caused by selfish thought or self-cherishing thought. So therefore, unless and until we abandon such selfish thought, we won't be free from sufferings. For example, without discarding the fire, one cannot discard the burning. So in short, since the self-cherishing thought is the cause of many harms and sufferings for oneself and others, so therefore, in order to pacify one's and others' suffering, one needs to sacrifice oneself for the others. And so one needs to sacrifice oneself to others, and oneself, one should cherish the others as yourself. So through this, you can practice the self-exchange in a proper way. If you have such thought or intention, then your action, your external action will be motivated by proper action. So due to this, your external action will also be a proper one, a beneficial one. Now the actual action of self-exchanging. Before we have jealousy towards those who are higher than ourselves, and we have competition thought to those who are equal to oneself, and we disrespect or we see low to those who are lower than oneself. But now we should practice the opposite, which means if one is higher than others, then one should feel jealousy. If one is equal to others, then one should have competition thought towards oneself. And if if one is lower than the other, then one should respect. Anyway, we should focus on others and not towards oneself. Whether oneself is lower than them or etc., one should not think of oneself, but think on others. The actual self-exchange practice means, like, may all my virtues and its result, happiness, be rapping on others, and may all their sufferings and their cause, which are negative actions, be rapping on oneself. So that kind of practice is called the self-exchange practice, which is very important. Through such practice, one can definitely suppress the defilements. Although this is not the antidote that eradicate the defilements or selfish thought completely. One should think that I am not worthy to receive any venerations or respects, but others are worthy to pay respect or to receive respect and venerations and offerings. And also think like others are worthy to receive praise, and I should be blamed. Others should receive happiness. And I should receive the suffering. So this is the practice of self-exchange. And also think that others are more educated than oneself. oneself is lower. Actually, thinking oneself as a very low person or the lowest person of all is a great practice of bodhisattvas. By thinking this, not only you can suppress the pride or arrogant, but also by thinking in such way, one can suppress jealousy or other negative thoughts towards others, and instead one can rejoice and appreciate and support others' virtuous deeds or meritorious deeds. Those who are equal to oneself, then we should have the competition thoughts towards oneself. If you have some superior qualities, then try to exchange with others, thinking that may all my superior qualities or may my qualities be wrapping on the others. So we should try to compete with ourselves and try to help others to progress on the path. I think that ourself or our defilements fault and they are lower than others from many different points of view. So actually we should not hate others, we should hate the ourself or selfish thought, because this is something that remains in our mind from beginning last time up until now. So these defilements or these defilements are like our guests that reside in our mind as a temporal guest. But no matter how long they reside in our mind, they don't appreciate. Instead, they will always harm us. They will always give us the sufferings. So this is the source of sufferings and problems and fear, anxiety, etc. So therefore, we should abandon, we should not cherish this self. So now, the fault of not practicing the self-exchange with others is that from beginning last time up until now, we have this self-clinging or self-cherished thought. And as a result of this, we have been experiencing the great sufferings of the samsara from beginning last time, and we are experiencing suffering, and we will experience suffering until we can eliminate this selfish thought. So all these sufferings are faults of not practicing or not recognizing and practicing the self-exchange. And now the benefits of doing such practice is that through the self-exchange practice, one can accumulate great merit, and one can reach the Buddhahood faster, one can suppress the defilements, One can experience happiness in this life as well as in the next life. So, therefore, we must cherish others as oneself. So this self-exchange practice should extend not only towards few beings or only towards our close friends and family members, but it should extend towards all the sentient beings without any discrimination or exception. So whatever good things that we have, or whatever qualities that we have, should snatch from oneself and should use for others. So this is the action of, and this is the action that is motivated by the self-exchange thought. As I said before, we should have jealousy towards oneself and not to the others. And due to this, then we should think that may all my happiness should be happen or should apply to others, and may all their sufferings should apply or happen on oneself. This practice is very meritorious. For example, there's a person called Zawi Pomo, and when his head was spun by a heavy object on his head, then he experienced excruciating pains, and at that time he prayed that may all others' headaches be happened on himself. So through such self-exchanging practice, through such pain, he was able to accumulate great merit. So therefore, exchanging self with others is a very meritorious action. So in the past, we harm others for our own sake. We can see people are using other beings for one's own happiness. They don't respect the human value. They don't respect the other's life. They can harm any beings for their own sake. So sometimes they harm others intentionally or knowingly, and sometimes they harm others without intention or without knowing. So anyway, we do lots of action that harms others, direct or indirect. But now we should change that habitual tendency. Now, we should not harm others for your own sake. Instead, we should experience more suffering, or we should undergo more hardships for others' sake. So to have this, we need action. We need intention and application or the action. If our mind is not doing the proper practice, then due to this, one should defeat ourselves, because letting our mind to do improper actions is not good. It's a cause of suffering. if due to negligence, if you don't help others, if you don't give our wealth and our qualities to others, then it will be spoiled. It means you will face the severe consequence from the messengers of the hell ones. So therefore, we must defeat the selfish thought in any cause. So we should not have attachment towards oneself or this life. If we really need to protect ourselves from experiencing suffering, then we should take care of others. We should protect others from suffering. If we cherish ourselves, then one will experience great sufferings. Cherishing ourselves is like cherishing the children of our enemies, as it is said by Sakyapandita in his short explanation on departing from the four attachments. If we cherish this child of enemies, then for a while this child will love us, but when this child becomes older, then this child will not love us. This child will revenge us. So similarly, having selfish thought is enjoyable in the short term, but in the long term, this is a cause of suffering, this is a cause of problem, this is a cause of anxiety and many other problems. So therefore, we should not have this self-cherishing thought, and we should not cherish our own body. We should not cherish our own body means we should not have a strong attachment towards our own body. And it is very important to have a contentment. The practice of contentment is very important. Although we need a livelihood, without livelihood we cannot sustain, and without sustaining our life we cannot get a chance to practice, or we cannot get the opportunity to practice the precious Dharma. So we need to sustain our life, so for that we need a livelihood, but we should be contained. If a person is working until they die, when they are in the 80s or 90s, if they are still working, although they have enough means to live, but still, if they continue to walk, then it is not right. It is wasting time. One should contain, and if we have enough livelihood, then we should try to focus on practice. We should not be a workaholic. So we should not work just to earn our livelihood or help others. If we do more and more actions to gain more wealth for oneself alone and not to help others, then it is not right. So therefore, it is not appropriate to have attachment towards oneself or one's own body. The body is actually like a servant. of our mind. Wherever our mind gives orders, the body needs to listen. Body cannot do any actions without the mind. So, there's no point to have strong attachment towards the body out of selfish thought. If we try to cherish this precious human body, this present human body or precious human body, we should cherish this in order to use this to practice Dharma, and we should not cherish too much. So we should follow the middle part or the middle way. You need to cherish, but not too much. If you just cherish this in an extreme way, then it is not right. You can't cherish this all the time. You can cherish until we die. Once one has been separated from the body, then we can't cherish this body. The body will be disposed in one way or another, like burning or burying or throwing in the water, etc. So at that time, no one can cherish this body. So therefore, at present also, it is not useful to cherish too much or in an extreme way. So we need this body to practice. So we need to use this body in a proper way. So we should use this as a servant for others. We should think ourselves as the lowest person, and we should use this as a servant of others. Many things depends on how we perceive. If you think we need to help Buddha Dharma, then we can feel more pride and more arrogant. So instead, we should think that we should serve Buddha Dharma and not help Buddha Dharma. By thinking in this way, like serving the Buddha Dharma, then our mind can suppress our pride and our arrogant. So many things are depends on how we perceive, how we see the things. So we should perceive in a proper way so that it can suppress our negative thoughts. So to the practice of equality of self and others, and exchanging self with others, one can decrease or reduce the obscurations, and one can increase the qualities. So it is worthwhile to practice, and also it is important to put effort on such practice. Since it is worthwhile, it is important to focus on this practice, and we need to pay attention single-pointedly without any distraction, so that we can perfect such practice. Every practice should be a perfect practice. If you start and then if you stop before being completed, then such practice will not be a very useful practice, or such practice has not much strength and power. So whatever we do, whatever practice that we need to complete thoroughly. And through this, our practice will become more meaningful and more purposeful. So, therefore, in order to remove the obscuration of defilements and the obscuration of knowledge, we need to bring our mind from negative to positive, and then focus on positive thoughts or focus on positive object single-pointedly without any distraction. Or in other words, our mind should stuck on the positive object or positive practice single-pointedly without any negligence. And that is the practice of concentration, or that is the practice of the fifth perfection. Now, the next chapter is the ninth chapter, which is the chapter of wisdom. Generally speaking, the wisdom is very important. Without wisdom, we can't eradicate the defilements, or we can't eradicate the obscuration of knowledge. Or in other words, without wisdom, we can't gain liberation from whole samsara. Because to gain liberation from whole samsara, we need to dig out the source of samsara. The source of samsara is selfish thought. And unless and until we eliminate this selfish thought, one cannot be liberated from the samsara. So, therefore, in order to eliminate this selfish thought, we need to adopt the antidote of this selfish thought. And the right antidote of this is the wisdom that realizes the selflessness directly. Because this is the direct opposite of the selfish thought. So the direct opposite can eliminate this selfish thought. No other can eliminate. Although, like loving kindness and compassion and bodhicitta, the relative bodhicitta, can suppress the selfish thought, but cannot eliminate the selfish thought. So to eliminate this, we need the direct opposite of this, which is the wisdom that realizes the true nature of all the phenomena or the selflessness directly. And this is also known as the ultimate bodhicitta. So generally, there are two main categories of wisdom. The wisdom that are on the ordinary path, like the wisdom that are on the path of accumulation and path of application, and the wisdom that are on the noble path, like path of seeing and path of meditation. And the ultimate wisdom is on the path of normal learning. So it can be divided into two, the mundane wisdom and super mundane wisdom, or the noble wisdom. And at present, first it is important to gain the mundane wisdom. And through gaining this mundane wisdom, then we can gain the noble wisdom or super mundane wisdom. So this wisdom is very important. And without this wisdom, the The remaining other five perfections are not called perfection. Perfection in Sanskrit is called paramita. It's like gone beyond. It means like going beyond the ocean of samsara. And without the perfection of wisdom, one cannot go beyond this ocean of samsara. So without this wisdom, the five others are not called the perfection or paramita. So others are called perfections because when other practices are sealed by the wisdom of perfection, then they are also called the paramitas. So perfection of wisdom is very important. It is like the eye to see the road or the path. Without the wisdom, without the eye of wisdom, one cannot see the path. One cannot see the mundane path, or one cannot see the ordinary path, or Buddhist path, Buddhist mundane and super mundane path. So, therefore, this wisdom is very important. It is said, if you don't have the wisdom, then it's like a blind person who don't see the path. So therefore, in order to pacify all the sufferings, suffering means not only the suffering, but also the suffering of change and the suffering of conditional nature of all the phenomena. So all this suffering, to eliminate all this suffering, we must practice, or we must have the wisdom, the perfection of wisdom. To identify the nature of perfection of wisdom, for this we need to know the two truths, the relative truth and the absolute truth or ultimate truth. So first, the relative truth, the ultimate truth is a state which is inconceivable and inexpressible. Or in other words, it is beyond our words and our thoughts. And so it is free from dualistic thoughts or dualistic visions, or it is free from all the four extremes. And relative truth has a dualistic vision. Relative truth has thoughts, but not inherently existence. There's four schools of Buddhism in India. They are called the Vaibhashika, Svatantika, Chittamatra, and Madhyamika. Although they have differences, but we, as a Vajrayana practitioner, we should not see some as superior and some as inferior out of our own defilements. When we distinguish, we should know the differences, we should say these differences, but out of defilement, we should not see some as superior and some as inferior. We should not distinguish them. If you distinguish them, then it means we are distinguishing the Dharma. And if you distinguish the Dharma, then it means we are also distinguishing the Buddha who shows or who gave these teachings. Then it also means that we are distinguishing the sanghas who follow these schools. So it means we are differentiating or distinguishing the triple gem. We see some triple gem as superior and some triple gem as inferior. So out of defilements, if we do distinguish, then it is not right. It is distinguishing the triple gem. Within the triple gem, we are distinguishing it. So it is not right. So when we learn philosophy, we should be careful, especially those Vajrayana practitioners who study the philosophy. We should be careful not to have the sixth root downfall of the Anuttara Yoga Tantra empowerment like Sridhara Vajra and other practices. Thinking some as superior and some as inferior, and then criticizing some teachings of Buddha is root downfall, the sixth root downfall out of the 14 root downfall. So when we study the philosophy, we should be careful not to transgress our Vajrayana Samayas. And also, when we study the 8th chapter, especially explaining about that the body is not clean, the body is full of dirt, etc. So when we study this, it is important not to transgress our Vajrayana Samaya of thinking all forms are deity or all bodies are deity, etc. So we should, based on our Vajrayana Samaya, then try to study the philosophy as much as we can. We can distinguish them by saying their differences, not out of defilements. So, those persons who gains the wisdom of hearing, wisdom of contemplation, and wisdom of meditation on the selflessness. And then another type of person is the one who has not gained or who is not endowed with such wisdom. So there are two main types of persons who follows. And if we cling the body as a inherently existence, and if we cling the mind is true existence, then there are many logical reasons that harms on such concept or such view. Such view is negated by many logical reasons. And one might think, if all these phenomena are not true, not truly existence, then how can we attain Buddhahood through the practice of generosity and others? Then the answer is, although in the ultimate truth or in the absolute truth, nothing is existing, if we analyze phenomena to establish the ultimate truth, and then you can't find anything. As I said before, the ultimate truth is inconceivable and inexpressible. So one might think, at present, we name as an ultimate truth, and we study on ultimate truth, we talk about ultimate truth, we can contemplate and meditate on ultimate truth, but actually all these are doing in the relative truth. All these are not the actual ultimate truth. All these are, how to say, like imputed ultimate truth and not the real ultimate truth. All this that we study and describe, etc., about the ultimate truth is actually in the relative truth. This is not the actual ultimate truth. Actual ultimate truth has no name and no no thought can perceive or cannot study, contemplate, and meditate by any thoughts. So it is important to know the nature of two truths individually. And we should not mix the two meanings to each other. If we mix the meaning of these two to each other, then we can't comprehend the actual meaning. We should not mix them. Also, we should not mix the interpretive teaching and definitive teaching. If we mix them, then we will lose the meaning. So, therefore, we need to study, and we just can't read the text and try to comprehend the meaning. It is not that easy, because sometimes we need to comprehend not the direct meaning, we need to comprehend the indirect meaning. Sometimes we need to comprehend the direct meaning. So it depends on the context, whether that teaching is interpretive teaching or definitive teaching. So similarly, when we study on the Noble Truth or the True Truth, we need to study them individually. We should not mix them. If we mix them, then we lost the meaning. Ordinary beings can see the phenomena as it is, and they cling as a true existence. But those philosophers or those practitioners, when they see them as a magical show or as an illusion, and they don't see as a true existence. So this is in the relative truth. So in the relative truth, we don't say all are inconceivable or all are inexpressible. In the relative truth, we do say that things are existing, phenomena are existing. But at the same time, we don't say things are inherently existence. So in short, in the relative truth, all things are existing like a dream or like a magical show, which is not truly existence. And in the ultimate truth, nothing is existing. And we should not mix them. Actually, these two are like a one identity with a two different aspects. Like this was is the relative truth. Seeing this was as an illusion is a relative truth. Then the true nature of this was, which is emptiness or free from all the extremes, and that is the ultimate truth. So these two are not separate identity. It's a single identity with two different aspects. So through this way, then we can practice the non-duality of two truths. If we see these two truths as a separate identity, then we fail to practice the non-duality of relative truth and ultimate truth. So in the relative truth, all things are existing, but all things or all the phenomena are compounded things. So those things that are compounded are not permanent. It depends on its own cause and conditions, and they are impermanent, and they change all the time. They change moment by moment. Although in the relative truth, all are like an illusion, but with such concept, with such thought, we can accumulate merit and we can attain Buddhahood. We don't say Buddha is a true existence. All are devoid of true existence. All are devoid of self-nature. So, with such thought, we practice and we gain such ultimate state. So, it does not mean that we will not born again because this is illusion. We will born in the illusion or in the illusory samsara, and we can perform virtues or we can commit negative actions in this illusory samsara, and through discarding the negative and through adopting the positive actions or virtuous actions, then we can attain the Buddhahood, which is also like an illusion or which is also devoid of self-nature. So therefore, our actions will not be meaningless or purposeless. I'm now talking about the ultimate truth. There are differences between Chittamatra or mind-only school and Madhyamika school. They think if there's no true existent consciousness, then who will see the illusory visions? If the object or the vision is not true, then which subject can see? There will be no true existent subject that can see this illusory vision. It is same. The object and the subject should go in the same direction. We can't say object is not true and subject is true. Or in other words, we can't say the external phenomena is not true and the mind or consciousness that see the phenomena are true. There's no difference because these two are depending on each other. Subject and object are depending on each other. For example, it is like right and left. Without the right, there's no left. Without the left, there's no right. Similarly, without the object, there's no subject. So, the Chittamatra school, they say the external phenomena are illusion, but the base of illusion should be a true existent thing. They give the example of a colorful robe. They say, when person see colorful robe as a snake, then clinging this colorful robe as a snake is a illusion. Actually, there is no snake at that place. So, thinking colorful robe as a snake is a wrong concept or misconcept. It's an illusion. But there's a base of illusion, which is the colorful robe. Because the base is existing, therefore, then they can see this illusion. So similarly, they say, although the vision or external phenomena are not true, but the base of illusion is mine, and that should be a true existence. And that is their view. And according to our Madhyamika view, we negate such concept. If the mind and external phenomena are same identity or substance, then there is no two things. One is subject and one is object. And also, the mind cannot see the mind itself. The knife cannot cut itself. One knife cannot cut itself. Similarly, the mind cannot see the mind itself. So, we negate the mind as a true existence through three times. The past mind has been already ceased, the future mind is yet to arise, and the present mind is also not permanent. It's a impermanent, it changes momentarily. So, through these logical reasons, we can establish the mind is not true. Mind is not truly existence. And also, since the object and mind are interdependent, without the object, there cannot be a mind. So through these reasons, we negate the true existent mind as it is believed by the Chittamata school. And now we establish the relative truth as a magical show. And so we need to know the relative truth as a magical show. And also we need to know the ultimate truth as a emptiness. So here, when we say emptiness, it does not mean just empty. If you're just killing as an empty, then our view is not a perfect view. That view is a fault view, because that falls in the extreme of nihilism. So, it is important to know all things are devoid of self-nature. All are like a magical show or like a dream. We see our dream as a false. And at present, we ordinary beings see the daytime vision as a true. But it doesn't mean the vision of dream is false and vision of daytime is true. In reality, both are, in reality of the relative truth, both are false. But at present, we consider one as false and one as true because our propensity of the daytime vision is much stronger or more stable than the propensity of seeing the dreams. Because of that, we cling the daytime vision as a true, and we cling vision of dream as a false. So we need to see all this as a dream. So when we see as a dream, then we don't have attachment. We don't have strong attachment. For example, when we have a strong emotional feelings in dream, then when we wake up, we will not continue to have same feelings because we see there's no point to continue this feeling because dreams are dreams. They are not true. They are not truly existence. So there's no point to continue such feeling in your daytime life. So similarly, if you see the daytime vision itself as a dream, then we can see there's no point of having attachment, there's no point of having anger, or there's no point of continuing such feelings, etc. So through this, we can suppress our defilement. So by knowing the reality of the relative truth, one can suppress the selfish thought. When there's no compounded things, then it means there's also no uncompounded things. Because compounded things and uncompounded things are depending on each other. For example, the barren woman has no child, and then there will be no death of the barren woman's child. To have a death of this barren woman's child, first that child needs to be born, but there's no barren woman's child, so therefore there's no death of this barren woman's child. Similarly, when there's no compounded thing as a true existence, then it means there's no uncompounded things that are also true existence. So, it means first we establish the external phenomena are not existing. When the external phenomena are not existing, then it is easy to establish the mind as a devoid of self-nature or devoid of true existence. Devoid of true existence. So, in the reality of the relative truth, both subject and object, or both external phenomena and mind are not truly existence. They are all of them are like a magical show or like an illusion. So there's no thought. There's no thought of a dualistic vision, or there's no dualistic thought. Then one might think, then Buddha cannot accomplish the great activities to benefit limitless sentient beings because Buddha has no thought to help. Buddha is like a wishful feeling jewel, or more than that actually. So without any thought, Buddha can help. Wishful feeling has no thought, but it can help immensely. But Buddha can help even more than that, even more than which fulfilling joy. So it is not necessary to have a thought in order to benefit others. Buddha can help others as a result of the practice that he has done on the path. Or this is the power of the practice and power of prayers that he did when he is on the path. Although we say Buddha has no mind, Buddha has wisdom, but Buddha has no mind. But at the same time, Buddha can help others. And now, we need to establish the ultimate truth as an emptiness. As I said before, we should not cling it as an empty. Emptiness itself is emptiness. Without this wisdom that realizes the emptiness, one cannot attain Buddhahood. One cannot have the perfection of wisdom. So it means without this perfection, one cannot progress on the path, and as a result, one cannot attain Buddhahood. So perfection of wisdom is an indispensable practice that we need to do on the path. And some might think the Mahayana teachings are not real teachings of Buddha. This is the source of our true truths or Madhyamika path. And so now they are trying to blame the source is not genuine. But just as others' genuine teachings has source, this also has source, because these teachings has been passed down in an unbroken lineage. So we can trace back the source. We can trace the source. So therefore, it is not right to say that this part is not based on genuine source. It can be established that these teachings are taught by Buddha himself through many quotation, and also through logical reasons. As I said before, like it can trace back. It is an unbroken lineage. So through this, we can also establish that these teachings are based on genuine source. And now we talk about the faults of not meditating on the ultimate truth and benefits of meditating on the ultimate truth. So what are the faults of not meditating on the ultimate truth? They are like, without this meditation, we can't abandon the defilements. And without abandoning the defilements, or without eliminating the defilements, one cannot gain liberation. Even though we try to abandon, we cannot abandon completely, or we cannot eradicate the defilements without meditating on the ultimate truth. And through our other practices, even if we can block or negate the mind, but it will come again. For example, if you cut the tree, or if you cut the tree trunk, then it will grow again because we haven't dig out the root of the tree. So, not to cultivate again, we need to dig out the root of the tree. If you just cut the tree branches or tree trunk, then it will grow again. So similarly, through other practices, even though we can block or we can negate the mind, but it will come again, it will rise again, because we haven't dig out the root. So, to dig out the root, we need to know, or we need the wisdom that realizes the ultimate truth. So, these are the faults of not meditating on the ultimate truth. And now, the benefits of meditating on the ultimate truth. When we realize the emptiness, when we realize the true nature of all the phenomena, then we can develop great compassion towards those who have failed to recognize or who have failed to realize the true nature of phenomena, and because of that ignorance, they create more and more sufferings through their defilements. So, for their sake, one can remain in the samsara without being sustained by the faults of the samsara. So, those who have realized the true nature of all the phenomena are the noble beings, and then they can remain in the samsara not by the negative actions and defilements, but due to their own will, they can remain, but they are not sustained by the faults of the samsara, because they are not caught up in the samsara. They remain in the samsara in order to help. It is like a lotus flower. Lotus flower grows from the mud, but the flower itself is not stained by the mud. So similarly, although the noble bodhisattvas are remaining in the samsara, but they are not sustained by the faults of the samsara. So, out of great wisdom, they are not stained by the faults of samsara. And out of great compassion, they don't remain in the nirvana or self-liberation. So this is a result of meditating on the emptiness. And also, so it means through meditation on the emptiness, one can accomplish the purpose of helping others and self. And also, it can abandon the two obscurations. Actually, all the faults can be combined in these two obscurations, and these two obscurations can be abandoned by meditating on the ultimate truth or emptiness. Now, the summary of this subject. So, we should know, if we don't realize the emptiness, then there's a great fault. And if we realize the emptiness, then there's a great benefit. So by knowing this, then try to gain knowledge on the ultimate truth and try to meditate properly on the ultimate truth. And one might think that one might have fear on meditation on the meditative of emptiness. Then it is not right. If you don't feel fear on clinging the self, or if you don't have fear on selfish thought, which is the source of all the suffering, then why do we have fear on emptiness or meditating on emptiness, which can pacify the suffering? So in other words, it is not right to have fear that removes the suffering, and not having fear that creates the suffering. That is a wrong way of thinking. So we must not have fear, because we must feel, we must not have fear, because this is a method to remove the suffering. So instead of having fear, we should feel joy that by having this chance to practice or meditating on emptiness, we can remove the sufferings. So there's no point to have fear on emptiness. So with this, I conclude my today's teaching. At the end, we should dedicate all our past and present merits to attain Buddhahood for the sake of all the beings. So with this in mind, we will do the dedication prayer.